Hey everybody, Nate here. Before the show, I just wanted to take a minute to talk about our sponsor, the Snack Nanny. The Snack Nanny is the latest, greatest spill-proof bowl. It's the first snack bowl for kids with a self-closing door. The Snack Nanny allows kids to snack freely without overeating, keeps kids entertained, and prevents them from creating a mess for mom and dad to clean up. Kids and parents love the Snack Nanny. It's easy to use, easy to clean, and includes portion control features that only the Snack Nanny offers. To order, go to www.snacknanny.com. or order from Amazon. Remember, you support our sponsors and they support us. Thanks and Nihei Debiru. Hey everyone, and welcome back to Chop Talk. Last weekend, Ezra Scott, head instructor of McLean's Kosho School of Karate in Nashville, came up to Cincinnati for a workout. In this week's show, Ezra and I continue our discussion about the weekend's workouts with Sensei David Hammond, and also compare notes from our meeting with Sensei Michael Awad. As I mentioned before on the show, Sensei Awad and I had been working on a book containing all his stories from his days in the martial arts. I had the recorder flipped on for the book while Ezra and I were at his house, and I am including a few short clips that apply to our conversation today. For the rest of Sensei Awad's stories and insights, you'll just have to wait until the book is released. We then switched topics to Chinese martial arts and the parables that are often passed on to help develop the students' techniques. For those of you interested in learning more about Ezra Scott and McLean's Kosho School of Karate in Nashville, you can visit www.koshokarate.wordpress.com, or you can also find their page on Facebook.
That's right. And then let's see, what else did we do this weekend? Saturday, Mr. Hammond's class was good. Mm-hmm. So the first thing he did was turn up the heater to 85 degrees.
Yeah. So, that's a little homage to the old Peoria days. I'm pretty sure his generation, Mr. Keppel liked to have the heat up pretty high in the dojo.
Oh, and so
I have heard
that's some traditional Okinawan training.
Which yeah, because like, be hot and there, humid there.
There
yeah.
It's natural though. It's 95 degrees outside and humid, and so you're trying to turn on a fan to cool it down to 85.
Yeah, that's right.
So. If anyone's out there doing the hot yoga fad now, try the hot karate.
Yeah,
it works too.
Right.
Crank the heat up, do some punches and kicks.
Yep.
But that was good. It was a real good
one. Yeah, we had an awesome workout, big long workout. We kind of went through the whole, we essentially what we were doing was perfecting basic techniques.
Yeah.
Which is what you're supposed to be doing in karate, according to my sensei, James McLean.
Right.
And it was really pretty cool because we started with the white belts, the brand new and young guys. And went through basics with them for an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Then we did intermediate basics, and then we did advanced basics. So, it's pretty grueling, and that kind of a workout is not for everybody, but you will really get good at karate when you do that. I mean, you will really be able to punch. You will really be able to block. You will really have a good stance, you know. So, and Mr. Hammond's definitely got all those things.
He does.
And incredible endurance.
And it's interesting because here's a guy in his early 60s who's outworking and outlasting.
He's literally outworking everybody. And like me and you are like pretty serious martial arts students.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I do karate every day.
Yeah.
I do karate every day. I mean, with the exception of maybe one day out of the week, I don't do it.
Right.
But pretty much I train in karate
and that day
every
you're doing jiu-jitsu.
Well, and jiu-jitsu. Right. I mean, I do karate and jiu-jitsu a lot of days. Like, I'll teach one class and then go to another one, you know? So, it's pretty impressive that a guy... And I work outside all day.
Yeah.
So, I've got pretty good muscle endurance. I mean, and Mr. Hammond will just smoke you. He really will. And he doesn't even have, like, an outside job or anything. I mean...
No.
You know? It's pretty impressive.
It is. It is. It's a good workout.
Here's a short clip of our meeting with Sensei Michael Awad.
The last lesson that Master Trias taught us was the essence of karate striking is always moving forward. It's always moving, even if it's just your foot 6 inches. Sir. Moving back is not good.
Sir.
But you can't teach a beginner like that, because they'll be out there, you know that, Nate.
I know, yeah.
But this is a dead hand here.
That was Motobu's wording?
Dead hand.
It's dead. I mean, but dead means you can't do nothing with it. I mean, it's way back here in the left field. You need it out in front. And a karate man, advanced karate man, strikes from here. Not from left field. That's like doing this. Winding up. You strike from where your hands are.
Sir. Front.
And you can strike just as hard from there once you know how to punch. But you can't teach a beginner that. They'll never grasp it. You got to be real strict and structured a beginner. No, it's got to be like this, the hand right here, until they get that down. It's like you do the real structured movements for years at first to be free of them.
Sure.
In the end, you're free of the structured movements. You just know how to... you just know how to move.
Sure.
So you're free of all the structured things.
Well, another thing that we talked about, we went over and visited Sensei Awad, and he talked about, you know, the last class that Grandmaster Trias taught him, which was moving forward.
Yeah.
So anytime you hit, you know, move into it.
Yeah.
So it's not just move, but even if it's a little bit, right?
Yep.
So even if it's a few inches, you know, hit and move forward.
That has so many applications. I didn't want to bring that up too much just because I don't want to be disrespectful of him. You know, he was the one teaching us a lesson right then, so I don't mean to be bringing up something else. Mm-hmm. But that's exactly, in Grace Jiu-Jitsu, is exactly like that, all the blocks.
Mm-hmm.
I was really thinking about that when he was saying, I mean, it's like there is no block where you don't step,
mm-hmm.
ever. Like, you're always moving into the guy, into the sort of center of the storm.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing with the way Mr. Awad moves in on blocks and punches. You're always moving into the guy. I've heard boxing trainers say that too, that you really always, like, there is no jab without a step.
Mm.
Maybe there's some style where they, of boxing, where they do that.
Right.
You're always stepping in, your weight's always behind, and you're always off balancing the opponent. Like Mr. Awad was saying, when he punches and you block and you move into it, you're on the offensive, and now he's blown up. It's one of those things where it's like, it's so simple. But when you really start thinking about it, it's like really profound,
right?
You know,
And then the thing that he sort of went on beyond that was him sort of expanding on Grandmaster Teresa's point about moving in.
Yeah.
But then his addition to that, I would say, was after you've blocked that guy, hitting with the front hand, which he really emphasized a connection to Motobu. In fact, the book on Motobu,
always hit the hand that's closest to the man. That was what he was saying, right? And it didn't.
Right.
It didn't necessarily have to. The way that my first kind of understanding of that was blocking and striking with the same hand.
Mm-hmm.
So meaning, like in our first Shuriryu Kihon, you step in and block with a middle block or a forearm block,
right?
And then you're using that same hand. You just turn it over right into the guy's jaw, right from there. So in that situation, that is the hand that's closest to the guy's head.
Right.
But that wouldn't necessarily always be the case. What's the most important is it's the hand that's the closest, right? Not necessarily the hand that you're hitting with the hand you blocked with.
Because
you could block with the other hand, like Nagashi, and you'd still hit with the front hand, correct?
Yeah, whichever one is closest, I believe,
is the
guy.
Idea.
Yeah.
And here's a bit of the conversation a little bit later in the evening.
And take the katas, him run the katas first and break them down to practical applications. Like, the katas are 50% theatrical. Big movements. The exercise is big movements. The bigger the movement we exercise, the more exercise there is. Just like in, Ampi, you know, you step up and cross behind, you do this. You never really do it like that. But you might do it like, he punches, bang, boom, bang.
Yes, sir.
But you're not going to step in, you know, and go like this, or snap your head.
Yeah.
But that's the structured kata.
Yes, sir.
And a lot of that became like that from tournaments. They stylize everything to look good.
Look pretty.
Yes, looking good has nothing to do with it. However, a good karate man looks good by his smoothness and his power. And you can just sense it.
Sir.
Well, a weak one, you can sense his weakness. But fancy movements mean nothing. In fact, the longer I've been in karate, the more simple movements are the best. Just simple movements. But knowing how to do it, and it don't mean nothing if you haven't developed the power and the strength and the speed. Power, the forms, the technique. How to punch correctly. Main thing on punching correctly is elbows are in.
Sure.
Elbows are always in and relaxed. Gotta be, if your elbows are inside, you're relaxed. If your elbows are outside, you're like this. It's no good. You want your elbow in because you strike here. If the elbow's out here, you're striking like this.
That's nothing. Yeah.
You're not going to hit right.
Yeah.
So you want to always keep the elbows within the body. Plus, it protects the body and it kind of rests on them.
Sure.
And the hands in front, not behind. That's the main thing to teach them in advanced class. How to punch and
yep.
strike from where the hands are. But when you're fighting, you might grab this guy and hit him. There's a guy right there, man. Your hands are out here. You ain't going to have time to bring your hand back. You just got to snatch him, bang, hit him again. You tow him here, grab this guy and headbutt him from where the hands are.
Looking for a way to gain an edge on the competition? Want to give your body some much-needed relief and relaxation? Try Medical Resort ATEC, Okinawa's specialist in sports therapy and wellness care. ATEC offers customizable massage therapy. Try their oxygen chamber for increased metabolism and faster recovery from injuries. Or take their stretching course to improve flexibility. ATEC is used by professional athletes from the Ryukyu Golden Kings, FC Ryukyu, and Ryukyu Corazon. Stop into their center Monday through Saturday at 12830 Oroku in Naha City, Okinawa. Call 098-859-1890 or visit them on the web at www.sanso-atac.com. That's www.sanso-atac.com. Hey everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, co-worker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks. Remember, if you have an upcoming seminar, tournament, or other martial arts event, let us know, and we'd be happy to announce it on the program. And now, back to the show.
Well, very interesting. You know, I had one other question. I was, you know, I don't have much experience with the Chinese martial arts.
Mm-hmm.
I visited a school in Chinatown in San Francisco once,
just to watch.
It was like in a basement. It was really
yeah.
interesting. In fact, I've got the guy's card. Maybe I'll post a link
yeah.
up. Because it was really, because the guy who was teaching, you know, I couldn't understand whether he was, because of the language barrier, mm-hmm. he was either 84 years old or he'd been practicing martial arts for 84 years. And I actually could have believed either one.
Whoa.
And he was just planning on a trip. The next week he was leaving on a trip to go visit his teacher in China.
Whoa.
Who was old, and they had pictures of this guy on the wall. I'm like, oh, okay, that was your teacher when you were, you know, 16 Whoa. Years old. And it's like, no, my teacher now, I visit him. And I'm like, and it was real, it was wow. extremely impressive.
And that guy was good.
And he came out, and, you know, he was leading the class for the first hour, 2 hours I watched.
Yeah.
And there were, you know, young guys like us working out, doing weapons and combos and stuff like that. And then they all left, and he let me hang around and watch. And he was doing like these super fluid techniques, like in real athletic that,
yeah.
hey, guys that are in our age or the young guys, you know, 20-year-olds,
yeah.
like, I would have been impressed by that.
Mm-hmm.
But that this guy was clearly in his 80s.
That's one thing that I've noticed about Chinese martial arts. When you watch, like, the, you know, and of course, all martial arts, there's, like, people who are really good and people who aren't, you know. But when you watch these guys that are clearly really good, man, they can really move. And it's in a different way. They're, like, so flexible and stuff like that. You know, I mean, it's, like, really, really impressive. Like, in the, I guess when I'm talking about that, I'm thinking about, like, the Shaolin type of forms where they're in the really deep stances and stuff like that. It's like they can really move around like that.
Very fun.
Interestingly enough, I don't know if you were really hanging around with that group so much yet, but Master Keppel has a big relationship with Liu Chang, Sifu Liu Chang, the white crane guy. I think maybe he lives in Taiwan.
I think.
He's kind of a stocky guy. And he's come to the Nationals like two times and given seminars. And yeah, that guy was really good. Very, very effective self-defense. Really strong. Like, he had excellent base and stance and stuff like that.
You know, that would be... That's sort of on my list of the next things to really explore because, you know, learning the Shuriryu to begin with. Then visiting Okinawa to find out where the karate started. And the other branch that we have in the Shuriryu is that Chinese branch with the Sing Yi influence. And so finding somebody who really is really knowledgeable about that. Again, not like the jiu-jitsu guys where some guy decided he's going to call this kung fu so he can sign up more students. But finding somebody who's really knowledgeable about that, that's sort of on the list. So that might be a guy to explore. But the question that I had for you, when I started reading a few books on this, it's in, I think, any book on Kung Fu. It's in all of them. I've got The Art of Shaolin Kung Fu here. I've got Shaolin Long Fist Kung Fu, and then Kung Fu History, Philosophy, and Techniques. And there's a bunch of other books on the shelf with Kung Fu in the title. They all have the same thing also. And they're talking about Kung. Kung being like a specific skill that people are good at. And they have all these different ones where it's the water-dividing Kung, it's the Dragon Claw Kung, the One-Finger Kung. And what they're describing is, like, for example, in the wall-climbing Kung, you start off with an inclined wall that's, like, really rocky. It has different bricks and things sticking out of it. And you put your back to it, and you kind of shimmy your way up to this. Well, eventually, after years and years of practice, you knock off different bricks, and... And so it's just, or you push the bricks in, and your wall becomes more and more vertical. And so now you're climbing up this wall with just the little nubs of bricks. And then eventually you knock off all the bricks, and you can climb up because there's still these little big eighth of an inch protrusions, and you can shimmy up that. And eventually you plaster over the wall so it's completely smooth, and you can put your back on that wall and kind of slide up and over the top. And there's another one where it was the bell ringing Kung, where you hung a 400-pound bell in your doorway, because everybody has one of those laying around their house.
Yeah, oh, I know, I do.
Right.
Two or three of them.
Yeah, you got plenty of them. And every time you walk by, you poke the bell with your finger and move it out of your way. So at first it won't move at all. After a year, it moves slightly. After 2 years. Now, I don't know what room you want to put this in front of. Hopefully it's not the bathroom. But eventually... You know, eventually you get so skilled after 20 years of practicing this that you can be on the other end of the house, point at the bell, not even touch the bell, and it will sway out of your way. So I've got a theory about why they're describing this in the in this way. What do you think? I like the sigh.
I think, you know, obviously I don't subscribe to Hobby Dobby martial arts bullshit about, you know, magical... You know, wall climbing and death touching and all that kind of stuff too much. I don't really, you know, I'm more, my background is going to be people who are more on the practical side of things, you know. But I think that there's probably a couple things going on there. I think that it's a parable. You know, I think it's a, one of those things where it's like, you know, as a martial artist, you need to understand that there are certain things you're going to try to do that are completely unattainable at the moment. But if you gradually progress your training, then you're going to end up with at where you can really do something really well. Like Chosen Chibana, there's some quote where he said about Makuhara training that you want to pick a board that's not so hard to hit that you won't hit it. Because if it's so stiff and hard, you hit it, you only hit it two or three times, you'll quit and you'll hurt yourself. But not so soft that you can just do anything to it. It needs to be a little bit of a challenge. And that's the way, you know, learning a technique should be. You want to be realistic with yourself and pick a starting point that's you can actually start from.
Right.
You know, where you can do it enough to where you can do it a bunch of times, a bunch of repetitions, and gradually work up. And I think some of that is probably illustrating that.
Yeah.
I also think it's interesting, the book you were showing me, and I don't know if this is going a little bit off where you're headed with it, but like the wall climbing kung, they had another one on there that was the leaping kung. And of course, the result that they're saying that you can get is preposterous, that you're going to be able to jump high up in the air and fly through the bamboo. I
mean, exactly. That's what they're saying.
It's something from a movie. It's retarded.
Right.
But it is an interesting thing. I think that there's this guy named Ido Portal that's like a body movement, body culture guy that I like. And he says that we have become a race of specialists.
Okay.
Human beings have become a race of specialists. You have these people, like, as far as our physical movement, you've got people that just can't do anything except for sit in a chair.
Right.
And then you've got these other people that, like, say maybe somebody's like a really, really, I'm not going to give any examples because I don't want to call anybody out, that might not be true, but like, somebody is like, does all they do, like, is box. Mm-hmm. They're a boxer. They're a pro boxer. Mm-hmm. And they can just move beautifully, their way that they punch and everything like that. But they, like, can't run with the shit.
Okay.
You'll see them running down the street. They're a horrible runner. Mm-hmm. Their mechanics are awful. Mm-hmm. Their toes are coming out. They're going to, like, break themselves trying to run.
Right.
He sort of encourages people to stop with the dogma of, like, I'm a this. Like, I'm a karate person, so all I'm going to do is just punch the makiwara over and over and over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. Just so that I can be the best at punching really, really hard.
Okay.
And it's like, dude, you gotta live.
Mawari no hito ni sawo sukete imasen ka? Anata no karada wa kyusoku wo hitsuyo to shite imasen ka? Sports massage kenkou no specialist Medical Resort ATAC wo ichido torai shite mite kudasai. ATAC ではお客様の体に合わせたマッサージを行います。また、ATAC の酸素質にもトライしてみてください。代謝向上、怪我の早期回復に効きます。柔軟性を高める、ストレッチングコースにもトライしてみてください。ATAC はプロチーム、琉球ゴールデンキングス、FC 琉球、そして琉球コラザンの選手も利用しています。ぜひ一度ご来店ください。オープン、月曜日から土曜日まで、沖縄県那覇市、おろく 1-28-30。電話番号 098-859-1890。ホームページもチェックしてみてください。www.sanso-atac.com www.sanso-atac.com英語、ポルトガル語、スペイン語、日本語が話せるスタッフがいます。
You know, it's like, it's
you
fine.
What?
To,
you gotta what?
You gotta live.
Really?
Your life. You know, I mean, it's like, you gotta.
My life?
Just punching is not.
Well, you gotta kick. Yeah, you gotta kick.
Yeah. But you know what I mean.
Yeah, you gotta choke people too, I understand.
Yeah, you gotta choke people too. He's just sort of encouraging people to be able to do a lot of different things. And it seems like a lot of kung fu people move better, frankly. I don't know that they hit harder.
Right.
I don't know that they can choke better and kick better. I don't know about that. But it does seem like they can move better.
Yeah.
A lot of them really move well. It seems like their hips and their knees are not all bound up. Like a lot of us guys, you know, somebody told us we had to do a side kick on the bag 500 times a day and we actually listened to them.
Right.
And you end up, I mean, it's like, yeah, you can do a side kick pretty good, but you end up maybe like if you're only doing it with one leg, all of a sudden you can't do anything with the other leg.
Right. Or, I mean, you're going to need a hip replacement. I mean, look at Bill Wallace, I believe both. Yeah.
Most of those guys from back then that were legendary kickers had a lot of stuff wrong with them. But that's the cool thing about the one of the coolest things about the generation that we're in now is people are learning about movement more. People are learning to move better. You see, like, I mean, of course, there's like plenty of stuff about that that's really silly, but you watch the body movements that these guys in CrossFit are doing, it's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
These are just like, you know, regular, albeit very athletic people.
Right.
Who are able to do like all these different things with relative proficiency, like Olympic weightlifting, and they can do butterfly pull-ups and gymnastics, and like it's like, man, that's really impressive.
Very impressive overall fitness.
Exactly, that we're getting to a point where people can do that many different things. You know, I think it's one of the really like there's lots of great things about doing striking martial arts and grappling martial arts. Mm-hmm. There's lots of great stuff about that for lots of different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a really good thing about it, is if you do striking martial arts and grappling martial arts, you're really doing two different sort of phases of movement.
Yeah.
And it's really great for your body.
Yeah.
It's good for you to be getting up and down off the ground.
Sure.
Because you'll see, I'll see this with the jiu-jitsu guys, that when we do stand-up sparring, they don't have very good endurance, or they're not able to move real well standing up like that. You know, where the guys there that have some experience with standing, they can do both.
Yeah.
It's really cool, you know. It's
cool,
you know, even if you're not like going to like go win the UFC or something like that, you know.
Right.
So, I don't know. That's okay. My expounded thoughts on what you were saying.
You know, what I was thinking about when I was reading this is I think that your specialist comment was right on, because this is talking about, you know, they are encouraging everybody to have some sort of specialty.
Mm-hmm.
The water dividing kung, the jar standing kung, the flying around kung, the death touch kung.
Yeah.
and that's, you know, and that's good. And there are a lot of martial artists, you know, especially even in Okinawa, that had a specialty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just about anybody who's listening to this has read Richard Kim, and in one of the Weaponless Warriors, and there's a chapter in there where they're talking about one guy's a specialist at kicking, one guy's a specialist in punching, and then the overall guy came in and inherited the system.
Yeah.
This is encouraging guys to be specialists, which is neat, but it also does give you a prescribed way of getting better at something.
Yeah.
So they had, in one of these, they had the guy dig a hole in his backyard that was 1 foot deep and practice 100 times a day jumping out of the hole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Guess what? Your legs are going to get stronger.
Yeah.
And then when you dig 6 inches lower, your legs are going to get stronger. And eventually, I mean, if you do practice this on a regular basis, as part of your workout routine with any of these,
yeah,
you're legitimately going to get better.
You're going to bury yourself
alive. Well, right, and then you're going to die in the hole. They're going to put, when you can't get out, they just push the dirt in. But you're going to get better at all these. So it is a prescribed method of getting better.
Getting better at something.
But then they take it to the ridiculous extreme.
Yeah.
Which I think is this. I think what they're doing is they're saying, well, if eventually, if you work this long enough, you don't even need to jump. You can levitate out of the hole and move over here. But you only will get there if you practice this for so many hours a day for 20 years and you reach this certain level of enlightenment.
Yeah.
Nobody is ever going to physically be able to do that. It's impossible. But it gives these people this goal out there to continue training. Even if they're at a very high level, they're going to continue to do that until, you know, I've been pointing at this damn bell for the last 50 years, and it's still and it's still not moving out of the way.
Yeah.
So I better keep training. And meanwhile, they have like this gnarled finger that they could poke in anybody's chest and break a rib.
Yeah.
So I think that's what it is. It's having this completely unattainable goal out there, and trying to get people to continue to work for it even after their high degree.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's probably a cultural element of it too, because have you ever noticed how they have really flowery descriptions of techniques and stuff like that? Like, that's a really big difference that a lot of like karate people or judo people will kind of rag on that because the techniques have usually, or at least in Japanese way of talking about karate, are more basic. Like, it's like Yoko Gary side kick or Yoko Kikomi side thrust.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just real directional arm entanglement, you know, stuff like that, where in the Chinese, the techniques are more flower. You know,
the black dragon drinking out of the lotus pond.
Yeah, they're really a lot of them are really beautiful. I mean, it's Chinese is a really poetic language, mm-hmm. and it could just be that that's kind of a cultural thing that
yeah.
any Chinese person reading that would understand that that's just a beautiful way of talking about it.
Right.
It could just be that anybody reading it would understand, like, oh, they're not actually saying you're going to turn into a mystical dragon and float on a cloud, but that's just how we talk about it because we're Chinese and we use beautiful language.
Right.
Because I feel like they really are into that, mm-hmm. you know. The Brazilians are kind of like that, too. They've got, like, really? They name things goofy, you know, the breath of the anaconda and, the, you know, like the kneading the bread and stuff like that. No, they do that.
Yeah. Or maybe we're missing out.
Yeah, you maybe we're missing out.
Maybe we need to...
We could both be turning into mystical dragons on Wudang Mountain as we speak.
Yeah, maybe we need to get a giant 300-gallon jug and practice standing on the top of it until...
I don't know. Mr. Awat said no on the 500-pound bag. He hit a 500-pound bag and he didn't think it much of it. Yeah.
All right, Ezra. Well, thanks for visiting.
All right.
It's good seeing you, working out with you.
Thank you.
And sitting down, talking to me, doing another episode of Chop Talk.
All right.
You're practically becoming the guest host
at this point.
That's all right. You're the go-to guest. So thanks again. To Mr. Ezra Scott, the head instructor of James McLean's Kosho School of Karate in Nashville. Do you have the email address or the contact information?
You can, if you look up James McLean's Kosho School of Karate on Facebook, I've got a Facebook page on there and you can contact me there. If you look up James McLean's Kosho School of Karate on Google, we've also got a blog type website that Mr. Neil Stinson made up, and you can contact him on there, and that's got our address and everything.
That's great. Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
And have a safe trip back to Nashville.
Thanks.
All right.
Bye.
Everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, co-worker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks.